in boxes. Let's go. Hello and welcome back to Billionaires in Boxers Radio. Hope you are having a great day out there, enjoying some of the interviews that we have for you. There's some more great things coming up, some of the interviews I was listening to last night, actually ahead of them coming out on the show, and there's some real gold nuggets in there, so I'm looking forward to you enjoying those. However, as some of you may remember, last week I was asking about an Ask Me Anything kind of section and whether or not people would be interested in that. It turns out the answer is yes. So my producer has spent the last 2 days vetting some of the questions. Some of the questions I will never get away with answering on air. So thank you for those who sent those in. I'm sure you know who you are. I will answer those privately if you want to call me. but there's no way I'm going to be able to answer those on the radio because sometimes it goes out on the TV as well. And frankly, I don't want to lose my broadcast license by answering some of those questions, even after Watershed. So what we're going to do is my producer's gone through and has selected some of the questions. I suspect this will go on for a number of segments, actually, because I want to be as clear as I can with some of these answers. A lot of the questions that we have chosen initially appear to be around business. There are definitely some personal questions in other sections, and I suspect you'll hear that either later today or tomorrow, depending on how we get on with these question and answers here. But I think there's going to be a lot in here that most people can resonate with as well. So without further ado, let's hit it. So first question from Anonymous. Hi, Anonymous. Hit my first $20,000 a month. Okay, cool. 2 months ago, I hit the $20,000 a month mark. I was first super happy about it, but lately I've realized I've got quite lazy and plateaued. Has anyone else had this experience? Oh, yeah. I'm more focused on the beach I'll visit instead of what I should be doing in my business. I have a very simple coaching business that doesn't require to be maintained and basically runs with very little effort. Nice. I'm not sure if I should keep it like this and just have fun and travel or scale it. It's hard for me to do both and I feel like I've lost purpose and motivation. My business is small coaches, helping them to improve their marketing return on investment. I spent 10 years in corporate and have a lot of experience. This means that I'm getting great, strong results from my clients with very little brain power needed. What do you think I should do? Should I just ride this out? Is there more to life? Any advice? Thanks. Good question. Okay, so firstly, congratulations on achieving $20,000 a month. That's great, especially given that it sounds like you've grown a business that doesn't really require you to be involved too much. So that's really nice. It's quite tempting sometimes to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I've definitely had that experience a number of times where I've just kind of fallen out of love with something and I've put it down or I've got bored with it and just walked away. Having been through that experience, my advice to you would probably be these two things. So firstly is, if you don't want to be doing something anymore, perhaps consider hiring somebody or bringing in a partner. The business sounds like it's there. It's already doing a great job. It's helping a lot of people. It's doing a lot of good. Can you either maintain what you have or scale what you have by bringing in partners, by bringing in that support system? We've talked about this before on the show, haven't we? But I truly believe that business is a team sport. It doesn't matter how good you are at your position on the field. You have to be surrounded by people who are equally as good at their position. So it sounds like that you've got bored doing a lot of this. So what aspect of this do you enjoy? What aspect of this do you actually love spending time doing? And then delegate the rest, outsource the rest, hire somebody, partner with somebody, whatever it's going to be. The second thing that I would say is that this is a really nice platform to build from. So I was able to grow our sports consulting practice, which I love, by the way, because I mean, if anyone who spent more than 30 seconds with me knows that I'm football mad. That's the one with the foot and the ball, by the way, rather than the hand and the egg. But I'm football mad. I will live it, breathe it. Like I have, drives my wife crazy, by the way, who also loves football, but nowhere near as much as me. I have subscriptions to like non-league football channels. So I could like, sometimes there are more people in my house watching the game than there are in the stadium. I say stadium, field. But I love it. It's something that I love, but I was only able to grow that sports consulting business and work with those clubs because I had a solid foundation, because I had monthly recurring revenue coming in, because I was taken care of, my family were taken care of, salaries were taken care of, my clients were taken care of, and now there was additional mental capacity, financial capacity, emotional capacity to go and find that thing that I really do love to do. So rather than kind of throwing away what you have, because the way that it was worded, it almost sounded like there was two choices. It was either, do I walk away from it or do I scale it? Actually, there's a third option, which is, why don't you maintain it? maintain it, have somebody else help you to maintain it, potentially even somebody else to help you scale it, whilst you can go and pursue your other passion. Because if you're having enough time to go spend on the beach, you know, what is it you actually want to be doing? This is that most people never have the luxury in life where they can stop and lay down on that beach and ask themselves some pretty emotional and deep questions like, why do I do what I do? Why does it matter? If money wasn't an objective, what would I be doing? What would I be spending my time doing? So I think you're in a really blessed position right now where you can start to ask yourself those questions. You can start to explore, what is it I'm actually passionate about? You know, if somebody was to put $100 million in my bank account tomorrow, so money was now absolutely fine, what would I do? What would I want to do? What would I love to talk about? What would I be doing spending my time? Where would I invest my energy? Maybe it's time to start asking those questions and kind of exploring that. So I love that. Well done. Congratulations. So that's definitely what I would be doing if I was in your shoes, because it is what I did. Next question. Expanding a boutique consultancy. Leaving the corporate world was a big leap, and now running a successful boutique marketing consultancy, I face the challenge of scaling up. Okay, it's another scaling question. I value the personalized service that I provide to my clients, but I want to grow without compromising it. Okay, I recognize this already. How can I expand my client base and my services in a sustainable way that doesn't dilute the personalized experience my clients have come to expect? Wow. Okay. So, firstly, Julie, thank you for the question. Let me tell you a little bit of a story here. So I remember somebody years ago convincing me that I should do masterminds, and I was just not interested in running a mastermind group at all. So group training program, mastermind, masterclass, whatever you want to call it. But I was really anti the idea, and I'll tell you why. I was anti the idea because I was under the illusion that there was no way that I could add the same amount of value to my clients in a group setting that I can one-on-one. I'm like, it's just not possible. A lot of my stuff is bespoke. I don't know how I'm going to be able to deliver the same results in a group that I would one-on-one. And then eventually I trialed it, and here's what I found. I was completely wrong. Actually, my clients got more from the group settings than they did from working with me one-on-one, because they still got access to me and my advice, but they also got the feedback of the group, of the community. They created partnerships. You know, I'm not always the smartest guy in every room. There are some amazing people in my client base who, they are the experts in their field. And if you're asking a specific question that's much better tailored to their skill set than mine, you better believe that they pipe up and feel comfortable enough to share that, because they know high tide raises all ships. And if they can help somebody, then who knows what that person's going to be able to do to help them in return. Again, law of reciprocity. I love it. You know I do. I talk about it a lot, especially on the show. But I think the reason I'm bringing this up is when you're talking about, you know, how do I scale without compromising that personal relationship? Well, number one, I think it is definitely possible. Number two, I think some of it's probably a mental block. Some of it is definitely a feeling of, well, it's me they're buying, it's me they're paying for. And I think a lot of businesses, particularly in marketing and coaching and consulting, we feel this way. But it's really not. They're attached to the results. They like you because you get them the results, but they're attached to the results. They're not attached to you. If you weren't getting them the results, you better believe that most of them, if not all of them, would go somewhere else pretty sharpish. So actually, it's about the deliverables. And when you're hiring people, if you're hiring people that match your ethos, match your ethics, match your morals, care about the clients in the same way that you do, and are delivering that work in the way that you would want it delivered, why would the result change? So actually, this comes more into the question. I never like answering a question with a question. But for me, this would boil down more to, have you spent some time to actually sit and say to yourself, what is it that they like about you? What are the results are they achieving? What is it that's actually important to you? Don't keep it inside. Actually get it written down on a piece of paper, typed out on the screen, scrolled out on the iPad, whatever it is. Because if you can't write the recipe for what it is you do, you're not going to be able to teach that recipe or repeat that recipe when you're hiring people and you're scaling. And that's a lesson that I think a lot of people struggle with, is that if it is written down in a recipe, then even somebody without your guidance and training following it will be able to produce something that seems similar, comes out similar, tastes similar, looks similar. With your guidance and mentorship, they're going to be able to do it to perfection. So start by writing down that recipe. What is it that makes you unique? What is it that makes you special? What is it that you're doing for your clients that's working? What is it that's not? Actually take the time to go through that evaluation process. And I'm going to let you in a little secret here, because this was a big one for me. Ask your clients, like go to your clients and say to them, what is it that you really like about what it is we do? Where have you gained the most value? Now, if you were to describe me and my business to somebody else, what would you say, right? Don't go into that with any preconceived ideas. Ask those questions and then just sit back and listen, because number one, them telling you what it is that you're doing for them is going to be really powerful because you're going to hear it in their words, which really helps you with your marketing. But secondly, you're probably going to hear things that you don't know. Small example, when I did this exercise probably about 18 months ago, I was really surprised that one of the words I heard most often was motivational. Phil, we find you really motivational. You really motivate me. You give me the energy to go and do these things. And I'd never considered myself a motivational person. It's just kind of what part of what we do. It was never a service that we offered. But to find that so many of my clients describe me as that motivational figure, and when they introduce me to others, they're like, he's going to give you the recipe, he's going to give you the roadmap, but he's also going to be there by your side, and he will motivate you to have so much energy and desire to want to go and do this and want to succeed, that that's what's going to make you win. It was like, okay, we don't say that anywhere in our marketing. We should probably start to say that. And when we're recruiting people, it's important that we recruit people that have that same high energy, motivational spirit behind them of like, we're all here to win. But I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't have asked that question. So that would definitely be my answer to that. Differentiating in a competitive market. Running a consulting firm in a crowded field of environmental compliance, I find it challenging to stand out. We have a strong track record and extensive expertise, but so do many others. What innovative services or approaches can we introduce to clearly differentiate ourselves in the market and add more value to our clients? I think the first thing that I would say is when you're trying to differentiate yourself, like how, I guess, is the first question that I would have back to you. I mean, you're talking about, you know, solid track record, but so does everybody else. How do you stand out? How do you make yourself look different? Well, the first thing is that you don't stand out by blending in. So if you're doing the same thing as everybody else, you got to quit that pretty quickly. And that might be that everyone else is doing a mailing list and doing all their stuff via email. So don't be the one that does it via text message or WhatsApp. I'm not suggesting that that's something you have to do, by the way. I'm just saying there are ways that you can stand out, but you're not going to do so by behaving like everybody else. But I think the biggest thing to take away from this one is it's better to be famous for 50 of the right people rather than 5 million of the wrong. So if what you're talking about is how do I get my content, how do I get my website, how do I get my LinkedIn profiles to stand out in comparison to my market, because we all do something similar, then the answer is that you use those platforms to position you as an authority, but actually your goal is strategic networking. Your goal is to go and meet those 50 people, not to have a profile so that when one of those 50 people land on it, they go, aha, this is the person I want to talk to. For me, it's the other way around. Stop thinking about it in a funnel where people are going to arrive, they're going to see a profile, and then you're going to book a call. Think of it the other way around. What if we change the process to say people are going to book a call, so they're going to check out your profile, so they're going to see you as an authority? Let's try and flip this on its head a little bit. Let's be a bit more deliberate about how we position this. And again, this works really well with events organizers. I use this example with my clients all the time, which is if you want to get booked to speak on a stage, for example, that event organizer is getting bombarded with speakers, right? They've got a list longer than your arm of people saying, I'd be a great speaker here, or my client would be a great speaker here. And when they're running that event, all they're focused on at that moment is two things: selling sponsorship, selling tickets. That's it. Maybe sponsorship and exhibition stands, but that's it. They're essentially selling exhibition stands and sponsorship, or they're selling tickets. That's all they're focused on. So if everybody else is saying, book me to speak, book me to speak, book me to speak, why would yours be any different? Even if you hire someone who, you know, they all claim to have industry insiders and contacts, and 9 times out of 10, it's nonsense. It just means they've got an email address of somebody at an event, and you're just going to be another speaker added to the pile. But if you were to contact that event organizer and invite them onto a podcast show, a TV show, that's what we do with our clients. We give our clients access to our TV network so they can rock up to those event organizers and say, we host a TV show that airs on a network that reaches 50 million homes, 40 different countries, and 1 million downloads plus each month, radio, podcast, television, blah, blah, blah. And it's free for them to appear. So they're going to use that as a credibility tool to go and invite that event organizer onto their show to, guess what? Help them sell tickets, help them sell sponsorship and exhibition space. Right? It's beautiful, right? So you're going to invite them and you're going to get to know them. And as you get to know them and you build that relationship with them, the first thing they're going to do is go on your LinkedIn profile, is go on your website. And if it's positioned to showcase who you are and your authority and what it is you can do, You've given them the opportunity. You've stood out from the pile already. Now they're looking at your profile. They have a call booked in with you. You get to see whether you like them, see whether you resonate. And if you do, then there's always a way of having that conversation at the end to say, we like each other. I wonder if there's anything else that we could do together. You are so much more likely to get booked to be a speaker or run a workshop at an event if you are giving something to the event organizer first that's actually going to help them. If everybody else is doing take, book me to speak, give me money, and you're going, let me help you publicize the event, let me introduce you to some people, let me help you get some sponsors, let me get you help you get some advertisers, and in return, I wonder what we might be able to do to help each other, you are exponentially and significantly more likely to be booked to speak or do that workshop than the person who is just saying, here's my sheet, or, you know, their booking agent or whoever is saying, you know, we have the perfect client for you, the perfect speaker for you. I mean, I get them all the time and they drive me crazy. It happens for the TV show and the podcast probably about 10 to 15 times a day. And they almost never research anything, nothing. I had one person who messaged probably about 2 weeks ago, and they managed to get hold of my email address. And for those of you that know me, know I don't usually read my email, so it was rare that I was checking it, but I was looking for a password reset, and I saw this thing come across, and it says, we have an expert in making money from podcasting. Would you be interested in talking to them? We feel like this could be really important for your audience. And I would read this name. I had no idea who this person was, and I went on their website, and they basically talk about how they get you sponsorship and advertising for your podcast. And I'm thinking, we sold our first podcast network 14 years ago. This person was still in school. And I'm not knocking age. I'm knocking the fact that if they'd have done any research whatsoever, they'd have been coming and saying, this person shares some things in common with you. They're at a different stage of their career. This could be a great conversation. Do you want to come? I'd have probably honored that conversation. I'd have probably had fun with that conversation. But the fact that they'd done no research whatsoever was terrifying. I mean, I have them all the time with the, hey, we run podcast and content editing services. Would you like us to edit your stuff for you? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you can, but what am I supposed to do with my team of videographers and TV producers? So a little bit of research goes a long way. So what I'm saying to you here is, instead of having this throw stuff at the wall and hope something sticks approach, maybe think about who these people are that you want to stand out for. Like you said in your question, you find it challenging to stand out. So here's a question back to you. Stand out to who, and what do you want to stand out for? I mean, you could turn up naked to an exhibition in the industry if you want. I mean, you'll stand out a lot. Probably won't win you any new business. Might get you a nice new hotel room with padded walls and a jacket, but it's not going to win you any business. So what do you want to stand out for and who to? And then maybe start thinking more about the law of reciprocity. So think about your website, LinkedIn profile, and everything else as an authority positioning platform. You're showcasing what you can do. You're showing them who you are. Here's who hires me. Here's what I do. Here's the evidence behind it. And actually, instead of using that to try and book calls, book the calls first. That's using law of reciprocity. What does this person that I want to stand out for need? Can I play the connection currency game and make an introduction? Can I give them a platform to speak on? Can I give them a chapter of my book? Can I write about them in a blog? Can I send them out to my email list? Can I do a LinkedIn Live, which everybody now has access to, and just introduce them to my industry? What is it that I can do to help this person that means that they are going to want to reward me with the thing that I'm looking for? That's a phenomenal way of differentiating yourself and standing out, I promise you. Okay, thank you so much for your questions. I will do another one of these a little bit later in the show. There's a couple more interviews I think you should listen to now. In fact, I'm going to rearrange some of the orders actually and let you listen to one right now that I think could be really helpful for you with some of these particular questions. But keep your questions coming. I'm really enjoying these. I hope you've enjoyed the answers. If you have, drop us an email. Let us know. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe, because who knows where you send this out to. They may well just need to hear this message today. Thank you so much for watching this interview on Billionaires in Boxers. If you would like to join us as a guest on Billionaires in Boxers, or indeed on Palooza TV, all you have to do is email us at vipbookings@billionairesinboxers.com.